Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at rt.ie is a simple email from anywhere in the world. Now, an article, I mentioned it earlier, in by columnist Brendan O'Regan, regular columnist in the Irish Catholic, writing about suicide, just specifically, because that's what we're talking about here today. He was referring to something that Joan Friedman said, that suicide was neither a sin nor a crime. And Brendan says it's certainly not a crime, but if you define sin as an action that offends against God, then surely it is a sin. Perhaps more awareness of the sinfulness would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith. Now, Anne Holmes has contacted us. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What do you think of this?
Horrified.
Why?
Absolutely horrified. My son died 25 years ago. He took his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no way was that a sin.
But does the church not regard it as a sin, Anne? Is that not Brandon's point?
No, they did years ago. They don't anymore. What my parish priest said at his funeral was, which was lovely, Father Barr, he said, when James got to the golden gates or the pearly gates or whatever, all God would say was, James, weren't you in an awful hurry to get here?
And you found comfort, and you found that a kindly approach?
Of course I did.
Yeah.
Because years before that, it was a sin. How could it be a sin?
Brendan makes
person must be very, very troubled.
Brendan makes a point in the Irish Catholic that more awareness of the sinfulness would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith.
No. Definitely not. I mean, James was he wasn't over religious. Mm-hmm. He came from a religious family.
Okay.
And to have someone say it was a sin, to say it was selfish, all these things were said. And I think it's absolute, unless you know what you're talking about or in that situation. But I don't think God would see someone that is troubled. And so troubled that they want to leave their family, knowing the hurt they're going to cause them. James said that in his letter, that he was very sorry for what he was putting us through. So how could that be a sin in God's eyes? No way.
And were you worried?
Our God is a forgiving God.
Yeah. And apart from the stress that you're going through, that you were going through at the time, I'm sure the grief is still there, Anne, about James, yes.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of were you worried that the church might take this attitude that James had committed a sin?
I did. I was when it happened.
Yeah.
But Father Marr reassured us that it wasn't a sin, that our God is a kind God, a loving God, a forgiving God.
But you know the argument
that I believe him.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And isn't part of the argument that life is a gift from God.
Yeah.
And that God still remains the master of life, so to speak. So to So to destroy life is to overpower the will of God.
Yeah. But, I mean, if there's a reason that the person... No one does it lightly.
Of course. I know the pain, Anne. Sorry, I know.
And the person that takes their own life, they know in their heart and soul they'll trouble their leaving their family.
Yeah.
And they don't do it lightly. They have to be really troubled.
But he was very young.
He was only 22.
Yeah.
To this day, we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to know, but we don't.
Yeah.
We won't ever know until we meet again.
Yeah. And so when you say, and the strength with which you say, we never know why, you're also telling me, I think, that you didn't, it was the last thing you were thinking of in regard to your son?
Oh, no way would I ever have thought. When the guard told us that something had happened, he was bringing me bad news, and that it was James, and I said to him, he must have crashed the car.
Yeah.
And he said, no, and he said he took his own life, and he might as well have stabbed me in the back, because it was horrific. James was kind, considerate, the same as my other boys. I have three more sons.
Yeah, yeah.
He was kind and considerate, and he would never do anything to offend anybody. He was good to the neighbours, everybody. Now, he was exceptional. He was, and there's no way that that could be a sin in God's eyes. No way.
Brendan O'Regan is there. Brendan, good afternoon. I know you're based in Arklow, I think, Brendan.
I know, that's correct, yeah.
Good. Brendan, there's different readings in terms of what the Catholic Church now says about suicide. What is your understanding of what the Church says about death by suicide?
Well, first of all, I'd like to commiserate with the lady and her son James. It's a terrible tragedy. And I think, and in fact, I could relate to pretty much everything she was saying there and agree with most of it. The thing is, when these are discussed, I think a crucial distinction is missed. So in the sense that the Church teaches, say, before the event, that suicide, the taking of life and murder and so on, all those things are wrong. But then after the event, that's before the event, objectively, but then after the event, excuse me, after the event then, that's where the compassion and the understanding that lady showed comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, I'm not interested in judging a person, but nor the Church, but you judge the action beforehand. And I think even the state law is based on that. You list out certain things that are against the law, but when somebody does them, hopefully the law is compassionate and merciful and takes all the mitigating circumstances into account. So when I was saying, no, in fact, I wasn't saying, I was actually asking a question there.
Mm.
It mightn't have come across in the reading that it was a question about it. Surely it is a sin if sin is defined as an event against God, and I was raising a question. So it's crucial to get that distinction, I think.
Well, in fairness, Brendan, the reason why you say it's a question is because you put a question mark at the end of it.
Yeah.
But you could equally read it as a statement.
No, I don't think
so. I'll try and put the intonations into it. Maybe you can try. Certainly, it's not a crime anymore. But if you define sin as an action that offends God, against God, then surely it is a sin,
mm-hmm.
question mark.
Yeah.
No, but that's more of a statement than a question. The question mark doesn't make it a question.
Well, we could disagree on that, but that's getting into little nitty-gritties. What I'm trying to get to do there is to get people to think, to wonder, is it? And you know, sometimes these days, you know, you can't even ask questions. But anyway...
You're important to ask questions.
Yeah, sure. And that's what I was doing. And when I wrote that, I realised I was sort of walking on eggshells there and tried my best to be... sensitive about it. And in fact, the little bit that you left out there between the two quotes where, in relation to what Joan Freeman said, I said I can understand her desire to be sensitive and avoid being judgmental or stigmatizing, and I would certainly agree with on that level. But I think it's important to make
Do you have answers to your own, as you say, you want them regarded as questions? So the question is, if you define sin as an action that offends against God, then surely it is a sin. Now, that's the question you're asking. What is the answer that you have, if you have one?
Yeah, well, my answer to it would be that if you're considering it before the event, kind of objectively, then yes. But if you're looking at it afterwards, when an individual person who's under shock and pressure does it, well, then I'm not going to start judging that person. Mm. I don't think anybody should. So it depends on which angle you're coming at it from.
And then the second part of the question is perhaps more awareness of the sinfulness would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith.
Yeah, sure.
Question mark. What's the answer to that, Brendan?
Well, I think it probably would. And I think, now, of course, when people can be religious and so on, but then when their lives get into a state and they're under terrible pressure and they're not thinking straight, all that may go out the window and they may do it anyway. But I think, in general, if they... The stronger their sense of faith and commitment to God and to love and to care of others, I think, it's an opinion, that they would be less likely to do it. And that's why I quoted from Hamlet, saying that he was tempted to do it, but as he called it, did do something after death, put him off it. And Shakespeare was a sharp psychological observer.
Mm-hmm. And what do you...
He's in Cuckoo Land.
Why do you say that?
I say it because, okay, matter how religious a person is, all right, you say, take my own life, this would be a sin, I'm not going to do that. Hmm. And something horrific happens in your life. That goes out the window, Joe. For God's sake, I mean...
I agree.
But people are so troubled, they don't even... They may not realise what they're doing. Now, James did know, because James left letters.
Hmm.
So he did know. It wasn't spur of the moment. He did know what he was doing, but we don't know why.
Yeah.
But to bring religion into it now is...
Do you think if there was more awareness of the sinfulness, this would act as a deterrent?
No, Joe, it wouldn't. That's poppycock now. No way.
I find myself agreeing with her almost entirely. So I don't think we're really arguing from opposite sides. I would suggest that in some cases it would. So maybe in other cases it won't.
It's a very, very rare case now, I can tell you. Because if your mind is in that state, religion will not come into it. All you want to do is get out of this world, get out of this life, get out of this torment, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, there's... You're raving.
And Brendan, what is your understanding again of where the Catholic Church stands at the minute? I know I'm reading a quote from Pope Pius X, and he said, "In the fifth commandment, God forbids suicide because should not kill, because man is not the master of his own life, no more than the life of another. Hence, the Church punishes suicide by the deprivation of Christian burial." Now, I know I'm quoting Pius X, which is a while ago. To say the least.
My understanding
of that was a few years before James died. That would have been the case.
Ah, no, that's ages ago. I think the way...
Well, it would... It would all depend on what priest you'd have or what... That would vote in places.
No.
But nowadays, the Church do not look at it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
They're more compassionate for people, and it's... There's no way that the Church would call the sins. No way.
So, Brendan, you're saying it's not a sin?
No. I'm saying that... The Church teaches that it is wrongdoing, that it is a sin. But when the person does that, well, then that's where the mercy and the compassion and understanding kick in. It may not have been so in the past, but that's the way it is now. And I've been at several funeral masses for people who have committed suicide, and it's tragic and absolutely awful. But the loving God comes in there. But you have to get the crucial distinction between the before and the after, or between... judging the person or judging the act. I think that's where the crucial thing comes in. That's why I find myself agreeing with pretty much most of what the lady says.
Well, what's your view of the act then?
Well, I think it's wrong, but a lot of people do things that are wrong under terrible pressures without, you know, either meaning it or without thinking straight, and that's where the compassion comes in, and where it's not our job to be judging the motivation of anybody. And if we do that, then that's the worst kind of judgmentalism.
Joan Freeman, who you reference in your article, who was the comments you were referring to, comments you made with Ciarán on News Talk.
Yeah.
Joan Freeman, Independent Centre and founder of Pieta House. What do you've seen this article? What do you think of there are questions Brendan is saying, but I think they're more statements. But anyway, that's people can make their own judgment. Your point, please, Joan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you? First of all, again to Anne, I'm really sorry that you suffered such a loss of your son. And to be honest, I'm absolutely echoing nearly everything that you're saying. The thing is, though, about the origin of the sin, and forgive me if my facts aren't straight because I just didn't have time to go back and look at this, but I remember reading many years ago before Pieta House started that... the reason why it became a sin, according to the Church, was back in the 5th century, when a lot of young men in particular were taking their lives as martyrs. And there was a glut of young men who were taking their lives, and the Church decided that they needed to put a stop to this. So they said, you know, if you do this, it's a sin. And that was the main reason why it happened in the first place. But you've also, just to follow up a couple of other things as well, the person who takes their life is in turmoil. Mm-hmm. They are not thinking rationally. And I have to tell you, the 10th anniversary of Pieta House, we had Archbishop Dermot Martin celebrate Mass for that 10th anniversary. And he apologised on behalf of the church for the way that people had been treated in the past, the families and the people who'd been treated in the past who'd taken their lives. So I think the language, and that was the whole point of the radio interview the other day, is about the language. The people who have lost someone to suicide are distraught. And I remember many, many people coming to me and saying, do you think he or she has gone to heaven? Mm. They need the comfort and the compassion at that moment more than any sort of judgmental attitude. And I'm certainly not saying you're judgmental, Brendan. What I'm saying is it is easy to be judgmental when you haven't gone through something like that.
Okay, Louise.
I agree thoroughly with you, John.
And absolutely. I agree with John as well.
Yeah, yeah. And can I just add, you mentioned the word deterrent. You know, it was classed as a sin for centuries. It wasn't a deterrent. What happened to it? It became secretive and shameful, and people wouldn't tell anybody if someone died by suicide within their family.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a deterrent. And the poor, unfortunate families that were left behind, that thinking that it could be a sin, the turmoil that they were left in. And one of the key things that keeps coming out all the time, and I always call this the language of suicide, is that when someone decides to take their life, it's because they feel they're a burden to their family. And that loving thought, even though it's not the solution, that irrational thought is the one that actually pushes people into suicide. If they only knew that there's no way that they're saving their family any angst or distress, their family's lost without them.
Now Sharon is on the line, joe@rt.ie. Sharon, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
You're listening to this discussion. Go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, just I felt compelled to ring in. I never really do, but I lost a best friend of mine nearly 10 years ago to suicide. Mm-hmm. And when I hear discussions or comments like this coming out from people purporting to be from, you know, the teachings of the Catholic Church and everything, it riles me and makes me so angry. Like the others are saying, it's only when you go through it or you have experience of it, you understand it. It's a wound that never heals. Never.
Exactly.
Never gets easier. You never understand it.
At this point, that if... I obviously I don't know your friend, and condolences, Sharon, but the what Brendan said, he's phrasing as a question, if there was more awareness of the sinfulness, it would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith.
It doesn't even come into it, Joe. I mean, people
right,
of all faiths and all shapes and all sizes. It's a psychological switch, like a counsellor once said to me, and it's fight or flight, it's make or break. And in them couple of seconds, they do it or they don't.
Mm.
No prayers can save. It can give faith to people, and I respect people with faith. But in calling it a sin, and especially during this time, Joe, we're in a dark time, and...
Yeah.
If we go level 5 again, we're going to have a huge, huge problem. And people are, you know, they're not sinful. We've no shame against it. It's okay to ask for help. But to feel that the families out there were ashamed of it, and faithful families out there are thinking again, oh, you know, oh God, it was a sin, he or she did. It's not.
And Brendan, do you stand over what you wrote?
Well, I do, because when your researcher rang me today saying, oh God, what did I say? And I looked back on the article, and I remember at the time writing it, I hesitated. And yes, then I felt, as I was reviewing that interview that Joan gave, I felt it would be a cop-out if I didn't mention that. But I tried to mention it in as nuanced and as suggestive a way as possible to get people thinking. It is one of the points that I thought was worth making.
And you didn't think it would offend people?
I didn't think it would offend. I tried my best to make sure that it wouldn't. I'm sorry if it did, but I think people... But the thing is, in one sense, it's being set up here in a way as if I'm on an opposite side to those people who are contributing. But in fact, I'm not. I can go along with it.
But you're saying it is... No, Brendan, hang on. You are saying it is a sin. I know you're saying because you put two question marks at the end of a sentences, you've turned them into questions. But they were statements you were making. You use the phrase, if you define sin as an action that offends against God, then surely it is a sin. Now, you put a question mark, but that's not a question, that's a statement.
There's no point in getting hung up on
the situation. No, but hang on. But Brendan, you either write the stuff and you write it in the Irish Catholic, which is the foremost newspaper, weekly newspaper for Catholics in Ireland. You either write it and believe it, or you write it just for the controversy.
No, God help us, and I do not write it for the controversy. I wrote that particular thing to make a point I thought was useful. I thought it was a useful contribution to the discussion, and here
we are having it. Did you think it was the right time during this pandemic and the fact that Ireland are struggling?
No, the context,
continuously was. Do you think it was appropriate to write something like that during a pandemic?
The context was Joan's interview about the assisted suicide bill. That was the context it was raised.
It's called
in.
A dying with dignity. Yeah.
The suicide and assisted suicide—they're different things. We're talking about the youth. There's older people struggling or potentially heading into another lockdown. Do you think writing an article like that is going to help people?
No, this is only a very small part of an article.
People look to faith for help, not for judgment.
I would not judge anybody, and that wasn't the point of it. The point, I mean, factually speaking, Joe, if you're discussing that, the church clearly does teach that suicide is wrong. Okay, now... Mm-hmm. But it also teaches about love, and therefore that kicks in, in caring for the vulnerable people, first of all, and afterwards for the compassion to those who have gone through that and their families, and obviously that lady met that compassion.
I'm taking Joan on her word, obviously, but from what we know of Archbishop Dermot Martin, it's not out of character, that he apologised at a Pieta House event for the attitude of the church.
Yeah, I think the attitude in the past, as far as I know, was very harsh and judgmental. But fortunately, I think we've left that behind.
But did...
Long behind.
Maybe, I don't know if you remember the exact nuance of what Dermot Martin said, Joan, but did he say that it's not a sin? Did he use that phrase?
What he said was, first of all, as I said, that his speech was very compassionate and... He was asking for forgiveness.
I presume he's asking for forgiveness on behalf of the church for whom
For forgiveness for the way people were treated, people who had taken their lives that they weren't allowed to be buried in hallowed ground. The families that were left behind were left with that terrible stigma. And you know, but one of the things, you know, why it used to be a crime, so that all their belongings had to be taken off them. I mean, it was a terrible thing, the way it was treated at that time. But the fact that Archbishop Dermot Martin acknowledged this, it would have given comfort to so many people.
And I have no problem with any of that.
Okay. Louise Bourne. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Isn't it just unbelievable that suicide is even related to the word sin? You know, it's just beggar's belief. When it's obvious, you know, these people have never gone through what people go through, that their loved one has committed suicide. Like, the despair they're in. Like, a lot of those people that commit suicide, Joe, I think, are suffering with depression. Mm. And unless you've been there, oh my God, you have no idea what you're talking about. And unless that gentleman... Unless Brendan was to know, or, God forbid, had a relation that committed suicide, he's no idea what he's talking about, Joe. I know disrespect, Brendan, but it's like, as I said, with depression. Unless you've been there, Joe, you've no idea. It's horrendous. It's just awful. So people, like, God is supposed to be all about forgiveness. So if you go to confession or general absolution or whatever, You know, does that mean only some of your sins are forgiven?
No.
You know? Like, it's just beggar's belief, it really is, that, you know, that the word, the two words are even in the same sense.
But Brendan is pointing out, correctly, that the church regards suicide as wrong and as a sin. Now, he says, yes. says that the aftermath, or afterwards, is much more compassionate than it used to be, but the fundamental point is still there, that that death by suicide is a sin.
And that's
exactly,
clear.
Joe.
Clear from the teaching of the church. Like, that's a factual matter. So,
and what do you think of that factual matter, Louise?
Well, I think the factual matter is a load of nonsense, Joe, to be honest with you. And as that young lady there spoke, you know, in the pandemic and the time we're in, everybody is somewhat down in the dumps, Joe. Like, people are losing their jobs and everything. The timing wasn't great, I have to say. You know, and it just, unless you've been down that road, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, with all your, I think the timing, as I said, the context was the Dying with Dignity Bill, and God knows the timing of that bill was very poor as well, and in terms of I think it was Palliative Care Week, and I think it was the Prevention of Suicide Day as well, and then TD and it all comes up with a so-called death with dignity bill, or an assisted suicide bill, whatever.
Well,
so
I think
he
calls it dying,
was very poor.
Dying with dignity. You're Francis, good afternoon, Francis. You're listening to the discussion.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Francis.
I'm only speaking from my own point of view.
Yeah, fine. That's fine.
I'm not trying to tell anybody else what to think at all.
Yeah.
I have a friend whose son committed suicide, sadly, and we chat every week. Mm-hmm. And I pray to him, mm-hmm. and I look, you know, I do regard him as being in heaven.
Okay.
But from my own point of view, my own upbringing, okay. I was taught that, at least I absorbed, and I was taught that suicide is the sin of despair. And mm-hmm. it's a sin against the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it put the bejeepers into me, and it stopped me from committing suicide.
Okay.
So, you know, just from my own personal point of view, I can't assume to know everything about what God's mind is.
Yeah.
And I hope to meet God, and I hope to meet my parents after I die. And I'd hate to have lost out on that by committing suicide. Now, I am somebody who thinks about things, and everybody is too, but I am somebody who thinks about things, and because I'm reflecting on it, and because we're all reflecting on it, I think reflecting on it could be a deterrent. Now, then, I know there are people who've had experience of their children on this, just in a moment of complete and utter despair, you know, just do that act that just finishes their life and it cuts off their breath and they're dead and it's all coming back. I know that.
And you mentioned the sin of despair.
Yeah.
But were you suffering with diagnosed depression, for example,
yeah,
at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
For 20 years. 20 years. I was hospitalised with depression. Yeah. So I was very, very down. But that's just knowing that not knowing, but just having that the edge to my life that I just don't know what's beyond. And if I know you do, would you believe?
And was there a reading? Was it in your knowledge from your own upbringing? Was it somebody you spoke to when you were, I don't know if you were contemplating death by suicide? I know you were depressed, which is an awful, awful illness. What is it that helped you, or whatever, see the face of God, see that whole...
There
you you say it stopped you.
I'd say Sister Bridget in school, when I was in third class, who taught us religion. She wouldn't have put fear into us, but she taught us to pray. And she made prayer a very big part of our lives. And prayer, and just being aware that there's a life that's after our life on earth, that to me is very real. And I pray to my parents every day, and I think about my parents every day, who are both dead. And that life is very real to me. And I'd hate to miss out, just for my foot to slip,
and
to miss out on seeing them again.
And did you think, because of your understanding of the teaching of the church, that if you had died by suicide, that you would not have seen God afterwards?
All I'm saying is it's a possibility. I'm not saying it would have happened. I do love God, and I know God loves me. but I think it's one possibility because we don't know the full picture. But I think maybe I was given the I don't know what, just having been given that insight would have made me, maybe I would have been judged more harshly, because I think I was taught that your life is, you know, it's not for yours to take, it's not for you to take. But another thing that you started to ask what helped me, another thing was the poem by Brendan Kennelly, Begin. You know, to begin every day, you'd have another go at it. Mm. Even if you don't feel like it, you have another go at it anyway. You stick your leg out of the bed and you put one foot in front of the other, you know, and so you just have another go at
it. So you manage
to... They're various help, you know.
You manage to find inspirational words or whatever.
Yeah, you do, don't you? But, you know, it would have stopped me. Just at the beginning of the show, it was the point was there about... the way I looked at it was that religion could be a deterrent if you're more aware of sin. Mm. Anyway, whatever sin is missing the mark. That's what the word sin means. Yeah. And I think you're missing the mark if you really give in. You know, when you're about to give in, something that will not acknowledge conclusion insists that we forever begin. That's the way the poem ends.
Okay.
So you just try and have another go, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but it's just, my thought on it was, just, you don't want to despair, and you don't want to...
Yeah, here. I know, prayer and teachings and different, listening to different people of a religious persuasion and otherwise can be... therapeutic wise or whatever, can be extraordinarily helpful to people who are in despair, as you say yourself, sure. Depression. Brent?
I know, just 2 points worth making there, I think. First of all, that I think it could be safe to say that all or most mainstream religions also regard suicide as wrong, but also that last lady there mentioned both fear and love, and while I did quote the Hamlet thing, the dread is something after death, and maybe the fear of something is a deterrent, but also I think I put much more emphasis on the love, that in the sense of the more you'd love God and the more you'd love your family and the more you're motivated by that, I think that would be a deterrent, even though it's not a guarantee that love for God and family would be a deterrent in some cases.
Yeah, I do agree that God is very loving. Sorry,
just to say that, you know, when you talk, Brenda, about the deterrent, you're talking about a deterrent to someone who's thinking rationally. When someone is in a suicidal crisis, they are not thinking rationally. And can I give a tough and safety word of a bit of theology, and I'm rubbish at it, by the way, but it's my husband who probably remembers his catechism. He often said, you know, for a sin to be a mortal sin, you have to have three things. One was clear knowledge, full consent, and great matter. And the first two are completely wiped out, because the person who is suicidal, and this is actually where Archbishop Dermot Martin talked about being rational or irrational, that people are irrational, they're not thinking straight. So therefore, it couldn't possibly be a sin.
I walked into
River Boyne fully determined to get caught in the reeds and to go down. I got into the sea and allowed myself to be pulled out.
Okay.
And I was fully there. I wasn't irrational. I planned it.
Okay, I don't want to go into different scenarios.
Okay.
Brendan, the one point that's coming up, now I know you answered, said, well, you answered by saying on the one hand, on the other hand, that people saying in the current scenario, and all we have to do is go through our provincial papers at the moment every week to see... the stress and difficulty that so many people are going through, and I think Sharon described it, Louise, in these dark times. And to raise the issue of suicide in this context as a sin is hurtful.
Well, I mean, if people take it as hurtful, then I'm sorry, but I don't think it needs be. I think it adds to the discussion. It's just one of a huge number of factors in the discussion. And when Joan there was quoting from the old catechism that I probably learned from myself about the conditions for a serious sin, then two of those bring in the compassion after the event. Only one of them, the nature of the act, relates to how you might judge an act before the event.
Yeah, but I think what Anne and Louise and Sharon, who had experience of friend, and relatives.
Yeah, I've had experiences too, so let's not have a level playing field there.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Anne, do you want to say anything before we finish?
I just want to say something. That lady was talking there about siblings, the love and all this. James came from a very loving family.
Yeah.
James knew how much he would hurt us. And that would not have been him at all.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way. He was 22. He never caused us one bit of trouble, nothing.
Yeah.
And he knew, and he said in his letter that he was sorry for what he was putting us through. So therefore, saying if you come from a loving family and if you sit down and start thinking, that means you're thinking rationally. You're not thinking rationally when you take your own life. You think you're going on to something better. And fair play if that lady was able to sit down and think and look at all the people that were taking their own lives, religious, from every walks of life. And I just don't agree with that at all.
And do you think, and thank you for saying it. Thank you, everyone, and Brendan, everyone for saying what they've said. But Anne, I'm very, very struck by what Sharon and Louise alluded to. That is, we're going through, and Sharon was saying now we're told today that NPHET want level 5, which is a complete lockdown for the next six weeks.
There'll be many, many suicides, Joe.
But that's what I want to try and...
Yeah, because people are going to be in dire straits.
Yeah, but we're
trying... No work, mortgages to pay, Christmas coming up, children to be taken care of.
But you would be saying to them, you're begging them to think again.
Oh, I would, of course. Please reach out.
Please.
Yeah, it's nothing. Go to someone, yeah.
Yeah, nothing that will happen in the next...
Whatever was troubling James, if he had to come to us.
Yeah.
I mean, we were very understanding, very open-minded parents.
Yeah. And do you know if he reached out to the Samaritans or whoever was around?
No,
that was 22 years ago.
He didn't, and he had good friends, and but they never taught me anything anyway, so he didn't reach out to anyone.
Joe, can I just comment on that very briefly?
Yeah, of course.
The problem is with all of us is that, you know, if someone is in distress, we expect them and encourage them to reach out. The reality is they're not able to. And I usually use the same analogy that if someone fell and broke their leg, you wouldn't hand them a piece of paper with a telephone number on it and say, right, go and ring that, 999, and you get help for yourself. It's the same when they're emotionally broken. So if we can become aware of the signs and be aware that people are withdrawing or that their behaviour is changing, it's up to us to reach to them. And that is, if there's any message that could go across today, especially during the next few difficult weeks, is what I'd beg you to think about.
Most people, their behaviour does not change. There was nothing. There was no sign.
Okay, well, we're trying to...
He had written the letter 2 weeks previous.
Had he, yeah.
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 And there was nothing.
The poor boy was going through.
Okay, Joe.
Okay, Anne, you mind yourself, and thanks for contacting us, Anne.
Right, Joe, okay.
Stephanie Fogarty. Stephanie, good afternoon.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay. Yeah, your point, please, Stephanie. You're listening to the discussion.
I have been, yes, and I know Senator Freeman as well. I'm the current Miss Gay Ireland, so I'm heavily involved in mental health.
Stephanie, will you give me a chance to just get a break and we try and improve your line. 51551, one more chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, Anne at the beginning of the programme was referring to an article in this week's Irish Catholic by the TV and radio columnist, long-standing columnist in the Irish Catholic, Brendan O'Regan, in which she wrote, I wondered, though, about one thing she said, she's referring to Joan Freeman, who's also on the line, that suicide was neither a sin nor a crime. Certainly it's not a crime anymore, but if you define sin as an action that offends against God, then surely it is a sin. I can understand her desire to be sensitive and avoid being judgmental or stigmatising, but perhaps more awareness of the sinfulness would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith. Stephanie, your point, please.
Hi. So I have been listening to the show, and
that statement in particular, it really gets under my skin. Mm. Because I was raised a Catholic, went to a Catholic school, and I suffered with my own mental health and I actively attempted suicide. And it was the stigma behind it being a sin made me not talk. Mm. So it's just, it can go both ways. You're saying, they're saying if there's more awareness that it's a sin. But actually, I think it, because it's been stated as a sin, makes people not talk.
Makes people not talk, Stephanie.
Yeah, because it's the stigma and the stereotype that we're always trying to address. And I'm heavily involved in mental health work now myself. I met Senator Freeman previously. I'm the current Miss Gay Ireland, so I deal with a lot of mental health issues from my community and outside of that. And I think it was just, there has no one been on speaking necessarily about going through the services that are there. For example, I had to attend PHA House myself, and people are saying that someone who's attempting suicide or who is committing suicide is not in their right mind. And unfortunately, that's not the truth. It's, they have this clarity in their brain. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right way to go, but they have this sense of clarity that they're like, okay, this is my solution. It's not that they're not in their right mind. It's just, it's a different frame of mind than what you would hope they would be in.
And when Brendan writes, and again, there's a question mark at the end of it, perhaps more awareness of the sinfulness of suicide would act as a deterrent for people with any degree of religious faith. You fundamentally don't agree with that. You arguing the opposite, Stephanie?
I'm arguing the opposite, yes, 100%, because I feel that when something is tagged as a sin, it's deemed as wrong, but yet we're taught in schools that God is this forgiving being and person that will forgive you for your sins. And yet, if someone commits the sin of suicide, they're stating that it'll never be forgiven. And that's not right. That is not okay to be teaching that. And I mean, I am tagged on both sides, one for actively attempting suicide, but two, also being LGBT, I'm condemned as a sin from two sides of the Bible, you know? And it's just, when you are marked by an institution of faith as something that is wrong, that is so deterrent to people's mental health. It really, really destroys them. Because you could have people actively participating in their faith, and they could be practicing Catholics or whichever faith it is. And then to hit this speed bump and this struggle with their mind, and then their faith completely flips on them and says, no, what you're doing is wrong. It doesn't matter all the good practicing that you did, or the prayers that you've said, or the services you've gone to. What you're thinking right now is wrong. It's sin. And I don't understand how that can be deemed as something that, if you make that more aware to people, it'll deter them, when, as a matter of fact, I feel that pushes them.
And Stephanie, and I want to pivot insofar as I can, the discussion around to that point that Sharon and Louise made in the times we live in at the moment, and the year that people have gone through, and the prospect of what's ahead. Stephanie, what do you say to people who you think might be going into that darkness?
There's always, always a light at the end of the tunnel. It might not seem it, even if it's a pinprick of light. Just go and keep talking, and it's okay to tell people, do you know what, I'm having a bad day. Because people are afraid of that. They're afraid to say they're having a bad day because they don't want to burden other people. But you see that, unfortunately, that thought of being a burden on other people continues to the point where you think you're a burden, where you're going to take your own life, so you will stop being that burden. People, when they take their own lives, I'll tell you, I used to think they were selfish. I was angry because I lost quite a number of friends to suicide. Mm-hmm. And when I went through it myself, it wasn't selfishness. I was actually, in my mind, I thought I was being selfless. I thought I was taking the burden of being around me from my family and from my friends, because in my mind, I was toxic because there is not enough supports and services. I mean, the work that PHA does is second to none, and there's not enough. There's not enough of it there, and that's not through their fault. But there is not enough money from the government down being put into mental health services. And it's such a shame, because you have so many bright minds, regardless of age, I mean, the thing is, you have people committing suicide, sadly, from the age of 13 up to the age of in their 70s, you know? And it's, people need to know that there's an avenue and a pathway they can go down, and these helplines should be made more available or more visible. They should be on buildings, they should be on bus stops.
And people to know that there's help available and to talk to somebody.
Yeah, and people need to know that it's okay to talk to someone and say, I'm having a bad day.
But I'm also thinking, Stephanie, that when I say to, when anyone says to people, well, talk to somebody that you trust, for some people that could be a priest or a nun or a cleric or whatever.
And if that is a priest or a nun and you trust them that much, that that person will more than likely try and help you.
Yeah.
I have nuns in my life. Look, I'm a lesbian and I have nuns in my life who don't condemn me for it. And
yeah,
I will speak to them when I'm having a bad time.
Okay. Thanks, Stephanie. Is Helen. Helen, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing? It's great to get speaking with you. I've tried a few times, but I never got on before, so this is my first time on the radio. Yeah, I was just saying, it's just listening to your program, I usually do when I'm going out and get my dinner. I was just saying that I saved my father's life many, many years ago. I don't know exactly, but I saved my dad from actually taking his own life, so it just kind of just brings it back. I can't go into, I suppose, much detail. But I just know he used to, it was to do with actually drink, actually. He used to actually like his, what do you call it, whiskies in his Guinness. And it was we were after coming from a celebration at the time. And it was actually quite late at night time, but actually, so it's just kind of just brings back to me. It's just, it was a great blessing to be able to save somebody, actually, because it does leave darkness hanging over family if somebody takes their life. You know, for people that have had experienced it. You know, the soul, it kind of is not at rest. It keeps coming back, kind of thing.
And Helen, did you speak to your dad afterwards?
No, well, he had drink in, actually. Now, my father never suffered with depression or mental illness, nothing, actually. I come from a farming background, so he was always busy on the farm, and a large family as well, as 8 of us. So we didn't really, actually, he was in hospital for a week or two afterwards, because when they heard what had happened, they said he would have to go into hospital. But actually, he was okay, you know, thankfully. It was never spoke about afterwards. I never spoke about it, and he never mentioned it. I don't know, but really, and my family would have spoke about it. There was a few other family members there at the time, but they wouldn't have known exactly that that's what he was going to do, you know, because they weren't there, you know. But I know he did, actually. He was very religious. Like, as a family, we always actually used to go to Mass. We used to have to anyway. He used to always have a relic of Port of Pio in his pocket, and I think a lot of people don't believe in a lot of things like to do with the saints and relics and things, but
a lot of people
I was used as an instrument really in his life to save him, really, and I always say kind of because of the relic he was carrying in his pocket.
Okay, I don't want to go into any detail, but what age were you when this happened, Helen?
Well, I know actually it was actually a communion celebration. Let me see now, what age would I be? Because I know he died actually in 2011, actually at 78 he was. So, I don't know what age would I
been. But you would have been quite young, that's my point.
Could have been, I would have. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was an adult. I'm actually still, I don't know whether you call a young or not when you come into your early 50s. But it probably was maybe, young. Let me see, 20 years ago maybe or more.
Okay. And he lived to 78. Okay.
He had cancer. He had a kidney removed, and then he had cancer, but he didn't want to opt for. He never wanted chemotherapy, so he didn't go for that. But I was so grateful that he did actually get it. You know, that it wasn't suicide, that he died by.
Okay.
You know, that actually we would have been there. Some of us would have been there with him. Actually, you know, he had everything. Actually, when he was dying, he had someone. You know, like the priest, and he would have the anointing. He had all the things that you get sacraments if you're a Catholic. You know, and that, but if it was the other, if he had to go the other way, it would, you know, I just know it would leave an awful darkness hanging over, you know, for quite some time anyway.
I'd finish, thanks indeed, Helen. I'd finish by asking John, Brendan, you can come in on this as well if you wish, but John, again, I'm really conscious of the times that we're in. I'm conscious of the people are going through difficult times, be it money or prospects or family cooped up together and being in places you don't want to be in. But John, does Piet House say to people, try as a friend, try and watch out for the signs? Is it a try and watch out, or try and do not be afraid to raise the issue? How are you doing? Tell me seriously.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not with Piet anymore, Joe, but I certainly have a comment on that. And just to also say to Stephanie, who is extremely articulate, and she's absolutely right. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, even if it is pinprick. So my advice would be, and I actually spoke to a group of people this morning, we're even though we have Zoom and everything else, we are very, it's very difficult to connect again with people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would suggest that you make it your business. Now, as I said, there will be some people who don't want to and may be feeling very low. But this is where we try. And what Anne was saying about, you know, some people don't show any signs, she's absolutely right. But, you know, the signs are normally shown, whether people realise it or not, to colleagues.
Okay.
And if you think about it, you might spend more time with your colleague than you do with your family. And it's the colleague who can pick up that sign of maybe they've stopped, you know, having a cup of coffee, or they've turned off their mobile phone, they're withdrawing. So there are some of the signs, but to persevere and to keep in contact with people. And even if it means at the end of, you know, you have a cup of coffee virtually with your colleagues, at least you keep that connection open. And to be aware that if there's no harm in asking someone, listen, I know you seem different lately, you seem to be down. Have you felt about ending your life? Have you felt suicidal? Don't be afraid to say that.
Okay.
They'll either tell you to go and take a running jump,
yeah,
or they'll say, do you know what? I have been actually.
And I'm conscious in these times as well where people are walking at home often alone.
Exactly. From
Brendan, do you want to come in on that? I know you're a teacher of religion, weren't you, Brendan?
I was in another life, yes.
Well, it's the same life.
Yeah.
And you're also the father of incredibly talented musicians, Rebecca tells me.
Thank you very much, yes.
Rebecca tells me. So, well done. But, Brendan, what would you say?
I
don't want to put you on the spot either, but...
But can I say, just from what I've been listening to, I think that there is an awful lot more common ground between all the people on the show today than there is different. And I know modern discourse tends to seem to promote polarisation and all this kind of conflict, but there's a huge lot of common ground among all the people on the show today, including myself, and I would love to concentrate on that. There are a few little differences of opinion, of course, which is natural. And just one other thing I'd say that, you know, why I said I better write something like that, because I think it would be a cop-out if I didn't. The church has its teaching. I think, in fairness, it cannot not teach it. But I think what's hugely important is, and I think it gets it right much more nowadays, the way they teach it is a crucial thing. How they get across the teaching and in what language and what nuance they use and what compassion and so on, that's very crucial. And what might have worked very well years ago, maybe they have to find a whole new language for today to resonate with people today, especially young people.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge for the church, not to deny their teaching, but to show, and in the relation to suicide, it's about the sacredness of life, the value of life, the worthwhileness of relationships, and ultimately the centrality of love, and that's where it all ends up.
Okay. Thanks, Brendan. That's Brendan O'Regan. He's a columnist with the Irish Catholic. Joan Friedman is the founder of Pieta House and independent senator. By the way, the phone number is Pieta House, 1-800-247-247. 1-800-247-247. Samaritans, 116123. Samaritans, 116123. Email the Samaritans, joe@samaritans.ie. That's joe@samaritans.ie. And people are asking for that poem by Brendan Kennelly, Begin. And given the importance that one of our callers gave to it, I suppose half it is in desperation, trying to connect with people who are going through difficulties and trying to say to them, listen, don't be afraid, as Freeman said, don't be afraid of talking to your friends, especially if you're working at home alone or whatever, you feel lonely, please talk to somebody, and you will be very surprised, I think, hopefully surprised, at the number of people who would say, hang on a minute, I had the same thinking, this is what got me through, or this is what stopped me, or this is what helped me see, as Stephanie said, helped me see that pinprick of light at the end of the tunnel. 51551, wash hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.